Tomorrow night is Valentine's night, and if you're looking for a romantic place to go, then maybe pianist Gabriella Montero performing with the RTÉ National Symphony Orchestra at the National Concert Hall is the place to be. The Venezuelan pianist will perform one of Mozart's greatest piano concertos, the Concerto No. 20, with chief conductor Jaime Martín. The concert will also include Beethoven's Eroica Symphony and the Overture in C by Fanny Mendelssohn, and Gabriella Montero is here to tell me more right now. How suitable a concerto is Mozart's Piano Concerto No. 20 for Valentine's night, Gabriella?
Oh, it's for dramatic relationships. it's a very stormy piece with even the major key second movement. There's this melancholic, terrible sadness. And Jaime and I were talking about it in the rehearsal, about how it feels as though he's giving up, but somehow always tries to lift himself up, and then he resigns somehow to life. But it's an incredibly beautiful piece, and one of my favorite, definitely.
Is it a romance? Is it a romance with a happy ending, do you think, Piano Concerto No. 20?
I think that's an open-ended question. I'm not so sure. It's definitely, it's for the strong-willed and, you know, hot-blooded people. Yes.
So suit you, I would have thought.
I guess
then.
So. I'm from Venezuela.
Yeah. And what age did you first even look at the Piano Concerto No. 20 from Mozart? Because given that you started playing at such a young age, I'm not even prepared to guess what age you looked at this piece.
You know, I think the first time I looked at it and maybe even performed it, I was perhaps 13 or 14. So it's been with me all my life, and it's really changed the way that I see it. And it's just one of those pieces. Well, everything in Mozart, really, it just reveals itself to you in layers at different points of your life in different ways.
13 or 14 is a phenomenally young age to approach any concerto, but a concerto by Mozart even more so. But, you know, you were almost well established at that point. Your grandmother was responsible. You know, how do people choose instruments? It's often put into their hand. That's difficult with a piano, unless it's your grandmother who had a great idea. What age were you when you first got your baby toy piano?
Well, I was 7 months old, because I was born in May. And for my first Christmas, my grandmother saw that my mom had bought a little toy piano for my cousin, who's older than me. And she just immediately insisted that that piano had to be for me. So they put it in my crib. Thank God it was not a real piano. It was just a toy piano. They put it in my crib. And they realized that I was trying to pick out all the tunes that I would hear on the radio, the lullabies, the national anthem of Venezuela, songs that my mother would sing to me at night to put me to sleep. And by the time I was a year and a half, I was playing all of these melodies by myself, by ear, and I was improvising as well. So they realized that there was something slightly not very normal about this little baby.
And was that anywhere else in the family? I mean,
no.
Was there a musical background of any kind?
Not at all. Not at all. In fact, it's very funny, because when I had my first piano teacher when I was four, and by this time I was already playing, she actually sent my mom out to buy a classical recording, because we didn't have any classical recordings at home. And she came home with, do you remember Wendy Carlos switched on Bach? It was a Bach CD and synthesizer, completely funky, not Bach. Well, my mother thought that was Bach, so that was my first recording of, let's say, a classical nature.
That's interesting that it was Bach, number one, and that it was a funky version
of
Bach.
You see, yes, that was an omen of things to come, that somehow it would be, classical music with a twist sometimes.
Yeah, because you're famous for, you mentioned even that at a very young age in the cot with your little toy piano, you were improvising.
Absolutely.
And I think the last time we spoke, you were doing a concert here in Dublin, and you did a late night set of improvisations, in fact. Yeah. We don't necessarily associate improvisation with classical music, but I suppose in Bach, we're talking about the Baroque era. Mm-hmm. Maybe there was a little bit more improvisation allowed and involved then.
Absolutely. I mean, you know, Chopin and Bach and Mozart and Beethoven and Liszt and Albéniz, I mean, these were all great improvisers, and they were known for it. And somehow, I don't know, we became very concerned with perfection, and we became a little bit stuck, I think, in the classical world. And improvisation was always the way that composers expressed themselves, and performers as well. And for me, it's always been a very wonderful device to express not only emotionally what I'm going through in life, but also to tell stories, also to add humor. I think satire is incredibly important, and also to talk about important events and important situations in life and in our society that I feel need to be brought to attention.
Well, let's just think about the Bach. I was listening to various aspects or various of your recordings of Bach improvisations, and the one that kind of really caught my eye was because it's so mellow and almost like a jazzy version of Sheep May Safely Graze, which is, which is normally quite a staid, quite serious hymn-like quality to it, but not the way you play it.
Well, that was from Bach and Beyond, right? That was 2007. And that's really a recording where the Bach themes were the nugget for these very experimental improvisations. And my improvisations now are much more classical, although I'll always, surprise with a ragtime or a tango. It depends. But at the time, I was beginning to improvise in public after not having improvised for many years in public. It was a private thing that I kept to myself because I had a teacher who, as a child, told me not to improvise. So it was something I kept to myself until Martha Argerich, when
the Argentinian pianist,
the iconic, tour de force, said to me, just looked at me and said, Gabriela, why are you not sharing this with everyone, with the world? And that was what I needed to be motivated to share it again in public and realize that it had value.
Sheep May Safely Graze may come from that album way back in 2007. And I know, tomorrow night's concert is, more of a formal classical concert in that we will have the overture, we will have you with the piano concerto, and then we will have the Eroica Symphony, obviously, in the second half, played by the RTÉ National Symphony Orchestra. Will you give us a little bit of an improvisation tomorrow night, if you're allowed?
Of course, I can't not improvise. Well, first of all, I'm going to improvise a cadenza because I always improvise cadenzas in Mozart. And I never know what's going to happen. There's nothing planned. In fact, when I'm sitting there waiting for the orchestra to finish the tutti before the cadenza begins, all I'm thinking of is trying to remember the themes of the concerto so that I don't go into a different concerto theme. And I always say to the conductor, all you're getting is a trill. I can tell you, I'm doing a trill. probably two bars in the same key as a concerto. That's all I know. So it's quite suspenseful.
So you literally just let it happen on the night?
Oh, completely. Yeah. Completely. And if I do 3-4 performances in a row, they're completely different cadences. And then as an encore, of course, I'll improvise with the public and I'll ask them to suggest a theme, a musical theme, and then I'll play it a few times, and then something that will never happen again will happen.
Yeah, well, possibly you'll get a lot of romantic themes tomorrow night, I would have thought. Probably. You mentioned also that, you know, within your improvisations and within your music that you liked to, you wanted to use your music to speak about important things. And I know that the current political crisis in Venezuela is very important to you. That is present in what I think was your first formal composition for orchestra, Expatria.
Yes.
Which obviously means out of the home place or
without a home,
because you're a dissident now in Venezuela.
Absolutely, I haven't returned since 2010, and I've been denouncing very forcefully the government, the regime of Venezuela for the last 10 years, and I haven't been able to return because of that. And these 10 years have been the most difficult 10 years of my life, because, you know, to lend your voice to an issue that is so painful and that is so full of sorrow, and to have to speak of what and how your country has been destroyed by what is effectively a narco mafia, and we know this now, and to see the plight of the Venezuelan people up so close. You know, they write to me, they come to my concerts, we actually have people living with us sometimes, and I'd like to mention somebody who's very special in our lives, who's studying here in Dublin at the Royal Irish Academy of Music. His name is Luis Magallanes, and we took him out of Venezuela in 2018. He was in a terrible state, terrible situation, but with this incredible talent and his incredible will to succeed and to do something with his life. And he's just soaring. He just sang at the Drogheda Festival, and he's like a son to us. And it's these moments where you see that you are able to help a human being despite the horrors that they're living or they've lived, that are the most incredible rewards, even more than a concert for me. So music has become a vehicle to express all of these stories and to talk about it.
And in terms of, you know, you say that you're not happy with the regime for the last 10 years. So what about when President Hugo Chavez were there? Were you happy with that regime?
No. I mean, this began in 1999 with Chavez. Chavez and Castro designed what's happened. And now, of course, we have a very, very complex situation that is now not as reported as it should be in the press, but it's now known what's been happening in Venezuela. But in 2010, I took the step and I positioned myself very clearly against the regime and decided I was going to use my platform, my composition, my improvisations, and every opportunity I had in the press to tell the world what was developing there.
So Expatria, that first that opus one in your compositional world, how impassioned a plea is that? It's an orchestral plea, really.
It is. It's a tone poem for piano and orchestra, which I recorded and I composed in 2011, dedicating it to the 19,336 victims of homicide that year in Venezuela. That is a huge number, which has now doubled in these last years. And I found that the most effective way to tell the world what was happening in Venezuela without it sounding overtly political, because a lot of people tune off when they think you're speaking politically to them, but in order for them to understand, I was making a humanitarian point, and it was a humanitarian plea from me to the world. I had to create a piece through sound and through emotion that would convey the suffering and the asphyxiation of a whole nation, like what has happened in Venezuela.
Thank you. If Ex Patria, then, that first composition of yours, is that impassioned plea by orchestra, tone poem for orchestra and piano, how do you feel? You're quite angry at other musicians and other people possibly who have platforms who are not speaking out.
Well, it's not easy to speak out. It's much more comfortable to try. I don't believe in neutrality. I think everybody has a position. I believe that it's easier to not speak out because it's much more convenient. You don't become a target of either side. You kind of live under the radar. But I think when in a time when there are devastating circumstances and effects on people, on society, and in my case on Venezuela, I think it's a very sad misuse of a voice and of you know, as an artist, you have a megaphone, you can talk to the world, and to not use that opportunity to speak of matters that are so urgent is a wasted opportunity.
Final question. You grew up in the Batancourt regime, and it was that regime was there for kind of 60s through until the 90s, essentially, wasn't it? And not necessarily Batancourt, but the democratic situation existed in Venezuela at that time. Mm-hmm. And you got a government scholarship to bring you to the United States. Was that a much happier Venezuela in your mind?
Oh, of course. I mean, there were issues like there have been, you know, throughout history and everywhere in the world, but it was a democracy. And yes, there was corruption, but you cannot compare what has happened in Venezuela the last 20 years to what happened before Chavez. And just the fact that we have installed that the government and the intelligence and the military and society has been totally infiltrated by what is a criminal structure is an entirely different conversation to whether this is from the right or the left, the political or not. These are mafias that we're talking about, which cannot be compared to anything that happened pre-1999.
I guess tomorrow night will be all about music. There won't be so much politics involved there. Pure romance for Valentine's night?
Music with a heart. Music with a message.
Heart and a message, that's what you'll get from Gabrielle Montero as she plays Mozart's Piano Concerto No. 20 with the RT National Symphony Orchestra tomorrow night, conducted by Chief Conductor of the Orchestra, Jaime Martin. More information on nch.ie.